Welcome to the realm of heroes and monsters. Storytime with your host, A.P. Fuchs. Stories of intrigue, stories of horror, stories of superheroics, stories of monsters. Get ready, the thrill ride begins.
Welcome to the latest episode of the realm of heroes and monsters, Storytime with me, your host, Canadian, Manitoban, Winnipegan, A.P. Fuchs. Yes. All right. So that's my little country brag for this episode. Yay. Okay. Rah, rah, rah. Now, welcome to the show. Thank you for tuning in this week. We're kind of coming towards the end of season two. Not like end, but like, I mean, I'm going through it in my mind. I think maybe four or five episodes to go, roughly, something in there. Anyway, yeah, so that's coming up, so that we're going to do that, and then, like, before, we're going to have a short break, and then we'll come back with season three, and I'll tell you more about what's in store for season three when we get to that point. On the creative front, I just want to report to listeners that the Axiom Man Battle of Powder trilogy is coming along just fine. I finished the first book. I'm into the second right now. And the good part is the second one is meant to be a short one, a novella, so it'll go by relatively quickly in terms of writing it. And then after that will be the final novel-length item in that storyline. And then we should be on track for our end of October release for all three, and that's the plan. The artist has the sketches, has the descriptions for the covers. We're doing something special with these covers. I'm going to reveal to you that we are doing a three-part cover, meaning that if you put all three books together, you'll have a single image. But at the same time, if they were all separate and you were just looking at each one, they still stand alone. So it's a challenge. It was a challenge for me to design these things, and it's going to be a bit of a challenge for Axiom Man cover artists Justin Schaft and Kyle Zajac to make the everything kind of blend, you know, to make it so it does look like one image. So we'll let you decide when the books come out. And other Axiom Man news, remember we got that new 24-karat gold-plated coin came in. Very special, very important, very cool collectible. The only independent superhero collector coin out there. So if you're interested, please drop me a note and we'll make arrangements. Okay, they're $25 each. Gold-plated, again, beautiful, untouched by human hands, completely uncirculated, comes in a nice PVC case for you, very protected. So, yeah, something to consider. And in the meantime, right now what we're going to do is we're going to switch gears. We're going to go back into monsters, and we're going to get into story time, because that's why we're here, right? Story time. One, two, three, go. Beneath the sand. Just look at her, Jerry thought. She's got her face in a book, completely on purpose. His wife, Maria, hated Danielle Steele. Something about how Steele told the same story every book, just different characters. But today at Birds Hill Beach, Maria was reading the latest Steele romance. Whatever. Jerry squinted when the sun shone in his eyes. Nothing worse than sitting on a sun-drenched beach after pulling a 16-hour shift. That was one of the reasons Maria was mad at him. Hey, it wasn't his fault the dishwasher broke. His daughter, Emily, was the one who put her Barbie in there. Barbie hit the blades and, bam, snapped one of them. Barbie stays in the bathtub, Jerry had tried to explain to her. She was only four, but seemed to understand. Now he had to work overtime because he needed a new dishwasher. Shirt off, he sat with his feet dangling over the edge of a two-foot-wide hole in the sand. It was about 2.5 feet deep. It seemed only barely started a few minutes ago. His 8-year-old, Jordan, worked feverishly, trying to dig the hole deeper and deeper. "Let's bury your dad," he had said when they first got there. He immediately got to work building up a mound of sand that would be about 2 feet high in the end. "Sure," Jerry had said. "Seemed like a good idea." "Why not? Kids buried their parents all the time, usually once at the beach and once at the graveyard." He shook the thought from his head, but not without a wry grin. Jordan had wanted to try something different in burying him standing up and down. Good for him. He was thinking outside the norm. Such a practice would serve him later in life, even if the boy didn't understand it now. But Maria, crap. Jerry ran his hands through his brown hair, then tugged his fingers back when he felt the bald spot forming at the top of his head. There was a time when there was nothing but thick hair up there. Stupid stress. Maria had wanted him to work a double. They were going to the beach, and she had wanted him rested. But he worked evenings, and he could only pick up extra hours during the graveyard 12 to 8 if he wanted overtime. Palliser made up the rules, not him. He packed furniture into boxes before they loaded them on the truck for order fulfillment. By logging hours in during the night, he would be helping the skeletal crew who worked the night shift. Everyone benefited. She was mad because he was tired and had yelled at her in the car when she told him she wanted to drive because she didn't trust a tired man behind the wheel. He'd been up for 19 hours by then and was in go mode, had his coffee, everything was fine. He knew if he did doze on the way to the beach, he'd wake up from the nap cranky, moody, and wouldn't be any fun to hang around with. Besides, he hated waking up from a short nap when his body craved an actual full night's sleep. That, and there had been a sudden lack of communication in their marriage as of late, making them feel like they didn't really know each other as well as they used to. They were working on it, though. Kind of. "What do you think, Dad?" Jordan said. The hole was deeper now, nearly 4 feet. How did Jordan dig so quickly? Nah, it was probably because he was tired and time seemed to go by faster. "Looks good. Hit any clay yet?" Jerry asked. "Not yet." Jordan dusted off the sand from his stomach, leaving a few light scratch marks on his skin. Emily sat at her mother's feet, filling a tiny green bucket with sand and dumping it over, then destroying the upside-down mound she just created and started all over again. She had done it 3 times before Jerry looked away. Maria's eyes never left her book. Jerry glanced around. The beach was packed. His family was about in the middle, roughly 12 feet from the water. A few blankets down to the left was another family, this one with 4 kids. 2 boys and 2 girls, all under the age of 10. The dad was on his back, sleeping, the kids burying his feet. The mother was returning to the blanket, dragging an air mattress behind her. But to the right, she could be no more than 16. Smooth skin, a white bikini with pink flowers on it, long strawberry blonde hair, and a body that would make any man look twice. For a brief moment, Maria disappeared until his wife cleared her throat. Then the look she gave him made his heart miss a beat and a rock fill his stomach. He cast his eyes downward, too ashamed to look up. "Way to go, jackass," he thought. "Idiot." It could have been the tiredness, but he so badly wanted to look at the girl again, and who cared what Maria thought? He wasn't her favorite person in the world right now anyway. "Almost done," Jordan said. He was bent at the waist, his upper torso hidden as he hung over the sand's edge, digging. "Jordan, be careful," Jerry said, and, reaching over, tugged on the back of the boy's bathing suit, pulling him partway out of the hole. "Don't," Jordan said. "What if you fall in head first?" He didn't seem to hear him. Only a moment later did he slowly back out of the hole, dragging an armful of sand up the side. He pushed it away once the mound was clear from the hole's edge. "Okay, that's enough," Jerry said. He looked over the edge. The hole seemed to go on forever. "Get in, Dad, get in," Jordan said, wiping away strands of blonde hair off his forehead. Jerry glanced over at his wife. Her eyes never left the page. For some reason, a part of him wanted him to show her. "Hey, look, I'm playing with our son. Ain't I a good father now? See? I know what I'm doing. At least I don't sit there lost in a book instead of trying to resolve an issue. At least I'm making an effort." Jerry brought his heels up to the hole's edge, slid his backside between them, then dropped his legs in. It was weird when his heels didn't touch bottom. How deep was this thing? Palms beside himself, he slowly lowered himself in, his shoulder muscles beginning to strain the lower he went. When a sharp burning sensation ripped through his front right deltoid, his mind flashed to the night before and how trying to maneuver a boxed-up dresser by himself instead of waiting for Stan resulted in pulling something in his shoulder. Palms at his armpits, he lowered himself in so his forearms were on the sand, his weight resting on them. The tips of his toes finally touched clay. Didn't look this steep when Jordan was hanging over the edge, he thought. Then again, he was half asleep, so who knew what he really saw. Jordan could have just been pulling himself out of the hole for all he knew, and that's why it was now deeper than he thought. He set his heels down, the sticky cool of the clay sending a chill through him. He hoped his feet wouldn't freeze. "Put your arms down beside you," Jordan said. Emily came alongside him and was already pushing sand into the hole. A few grains hit his eyes. He blinked them away. "Careful, Em," he said. Jordan pushed sand into the hole. The sand filled in around him like a prickly rainfall. Another chill ran through him when he wriggled his toes against the clay. It felt kind of rubbery. "Should have put on some sand on the bottom," Jerry said. "My toes are cold." "It's okay, Dad," Jordan said. Jerry wriggled his toes some more, allowing some of the sand that had filled up beside his ankles beneath his feet, underneath. There, much warmer. The sand was up to his shins now. He was immobile from the knee down. Emily pushed in more sand with her small hands. A few of the kids passing by with their parents stood and watched for a moment before continuing on. Jordan filled Emily's bucket with sand and dumped it in. "See what your kids are doing?" Jerry said to Maria. She glanced up from her book. "Finally." He gave her a smile. Her eyes returned to the page. "Sheesh. Cut me some slack already. You're being unreasonable." She didn't say anything. Was she mad at him for something else and not just because he worked a double? Or was this just because they had dubbed their non-communication syndrome? Everyone got grouchy. He also realized he was acting like a child. He was too tired to care. The sand was already at his elbows. How much time had passed? "Are you stuck, Daddy?" Emily asked. There was still some maneuverability in his hands and wrists, but he was useless from the waist down. He could still get out, though, if he had to. "No, honey, I'm fine," he said. She kissed his forehead. Jordan kept piling the sand in. Fatigue hit him. His arms felt weak. His legs relaxed in the sand. His shoulders sagged. The double shift had finally caught up. Eyes heavy, he yawned and got a spray of sand on his tongue. "Yuck," he said, spitting it out. "You did it again, Em." She gave him a sweet smile and continued helping her brother shovel in the sand. The sun found a blue patch between two clouds and seemed to have its rays singled in on Jerry's eyes. Tiredness pressed against his temples. Maria was mad at him. Jordan poured in the sand. Emily helped. Tiredness pushed on. Jerry opened his eyes. He was alone. It was night, the stars sharp points of light against a rich purple mat. A few dark gray clouds hung low in the sky. The moon was white and bright and right across from him. Maria was gone. So was Jordan and Emily. So was everyone else. He turned his head as far to the right as his neck would allow, half expecting Maria to be in there, sitting on her chair, reading her book. But there was nothing, only the light gray sand where she once was. Even Emily's little green bucket was gone. "Hello?" he said. "Hello." The only sound was the waves rolling into shore, then receding back into the water. He wriggled his arms. They were packed in with sand. His legs. He wiggled them hard, pressed down where he thought his feet would be. Even if he could just stand on his tiptoes, elevate himself somehow, maybe he could set himself free. "Anybody?" Louder. He could scream louder. "Anybody? Help!" Nothing. No one. "Hey, there's somebody here. Hello?" His voice scraped against the back of his throat. "Maria! Kids!" Heart racing, he fought against the sand. He was in it right up to his chin, and with each struggle, the sand seemed to press down harder on his shoulders, squeeze tighter around his neck. A small clump of sand landed on his tongue. After spitting it out, he clamped his mouth shut and wriggled and thrashed about as hard as he could. "Ah!" he shouted. Did his wife leave him here? How could he have been left alone? Wouldn't anybody have seen him? It wasn't hard to miss a sleeping man, his head poking out of the sand. There's no way anyone hadn't seen him. For an instant, he thought he might be dreaming, that this was just some horrible nightmare and he'd wake up soon, look up into his kids' faces, his heart beating hard from such a terrible dream. But he wasn't dreaming. Even during those dreams, he swore that they were real, were the truth. There was still that faint underlying feeling of, this wasn't reality. eyes watering. He sucked in a deep breath and screamed, "Help!" Voice catching in his throat, his stomach lurched, and a tangy bile bubbled up onto his tongue. Coughing, he accidentally swallowed and spewed out a small pool of gooey bile that looked more like frothy orange juice. He cleared his throat, blinked away the tears, and closed his eyes. "Okay, don't panic. If worse comes to worse, you'll be found in the morning. Folks always come to the beach on Sundays, so no big deal." His pulse was in his neck. Despite his best effort to calm himself, he couldn't steady his heart. What if he had a heart attack and died? What if the wind picked up and blew the sand up and over his head, burying him? "Lord, please," he said. "I'm sorry, Maria. Did you do this? Did you leave me here?" He looked up and down the beach again and suddenly realized what had been nagging at the back of his mind. The footprints were missing, both around him and up and along the whole length of the beach, as if no one had ever set foot here before. This couldn't be real. Focusing, he tried to slowly draw his arms up. Just raise the shoulders and pull up with the elbows. Slide out of the sand as though out of a shirt. He tried moving his fingers, but couldn't. His arms were asleep. The pressure from the sand against his body must be pressing against a vein or two, blocking off the blood. He felt the sand all around his skin, but couldn't for the life of him make his hands or arms work. He tried focusing on his legs, tried raising his knees, perhaps by doing so allowing a certain amount of sand beneath his feet so that, once done, he was in a more seated position instead of standing straight up and down. His legs wouldn't budge. The sand had him the same as his arms. The waves rolled into shore. Listening intently, he searched the air for the sound of cars driving down the road that ran by the beach's parking lot. "Please let somebody be out there," he thought. There was nothing. The sound of the waves even drowned out any rustling of the leaves the light breeze might have stirred as it blew through the treetops about 40 feet behind him. He was in Birdsill Park. There was camping, a beach. Surely somebody was around. Didn't they have park rangers or some such that patrolled the grounds either on foot or by car? Someone had to be by soon. He didn't know what time it was, but if he had to guess, it was probably around 1 in the morning. It was late, no doubt, but it didn't feel too late. Then again, I could be way off, he thought. If he was off, that might be a good thing. Maybe it was around 4 or 5, and soon the early morning beachgoers would be along to set up their blankets. A sharp pang of cold stabbed his feet, and he remembered the clay. Was that why he couldn't feel anything beneath the sand? Was he frozen from the knees down? His thoughts stopped when something crawled along the sand toward him. What was that? Looked like a shadow skittering across the ground. A leaf? No, he thought. Though there were trees behind him, it was still far from fall, and he couldn't see any other leaves on the sand. The shadow, the thing that moved, was gone. Dark circles rippled on the water's surface, the waves' crest sharp and white as they curled in. If it wasn't for his circumstance, Jerry would have called them beautiful. "Come on, Maria," he muttered. "I can't believe she left me here. Who does that? How could Jordan or Emily let her do that? Hey, they're young, but they know not to leave their father buried in the sand, only his bloody head sticking out. How could anyone not have seen me? Wouldn't someone say something? Wouldn't anybody do something?" Tears wet his eyes. "Ah!" His scream echoed on the air. Twisting, turning, he tried to rip himself free from his sandy imprisonment. What was going on? How many times can I get mad over this? I'm stuck. He knew it was true. No matter what he did or how loud he shouted, there was nothing he could do about this. Nothing. But wait. Man, he was thirsty. If only the water would roll in as far from the shore as he was. Just to have a drink. Don't look at it. It's funny how that worked, seeing water or the like when you're thirsty. You'd almost be willing to get down on your hands and knees and lap at a dirty puddle if you had to. A chill swept through him and he wondered how much the temperature had dropped since he first got there this afternoon. Probably a good 10 degrees, maybe more. His arms and legs were still numb. He had an itch where the corner of his eye met the bridge of his nose. He twitched, wrinkled his cheeks, trying to scratch it or move it away. It didn't work, and for a moment, he thought he'd lose his mind if he couldn't scratch it. His heart raced again. I could die out here. It served me right, too, for the jackass I've been today. Then, I'm sorry, Maria. Kids. Maybe I should die out here. They'd be better off without me, right? At least maybe happier? He didn't know. Obviously, his family needed him for financial support, but as of late, he hadn't really been there for them. He'd play with his kids, kiss his wife goodnight, help out with dinner, even do the blasted dishes, but his heart was never in it. He was just being the good father, doing those things because that's what good fathers and husbands do. Stomach flipping upside down, realizing his own selfishness, he tensed up when that dark something moved along the sand toward him. He squinted his eyes, focused, tried to take a closer look. For a second, it looked like a scorpion. "Couldn't be," he whispered. Scorpions didn't live in Manitoba, at least not on a provincial parks beach. What was that thing? It wasn't an animal or anything warm-blooded, that's for sure. He could make out fur or hair or any kind, none of it, and his body didn't appear soft or something that would indicate it was a mammal or, as he always thought of mammals, friendly. Before he could really see what it was, it zipped past him and disappeared out of eyeshot. Sharp cold tickled his toes, then something wet and slippery, there, deep beneath the sand. Clay? Had his body heat somehow melted it and it was now oozing between his toes? What happened to the sand he allowed in earlier, between his feet and the clay? Maybe he pressed the sand into the clay and some of the clay came up. It didn't matter. Come on, he thought. Don't be ridiculous. Body heat can't melt clay, and even if it could, it wouldn't have taken this long to do it. Head feeling full of fog and weight, he realized his thoughts were nonsense. He had never been one to stay up late and not get crazy thoughts when the hours crept toward dawn. In bed by 11, that was his motto, a habit since as far back as he could remember. He remembered being a kid, and if he stayed up past 12, his father would rain fire and brimstone on him for doing so. People sleep at night, his dad always said. Maybe I should just go to sleep and wait until morning? Maybe I'll wake up and someone will be digging me out, he thought. Then again, if I fall asleep and someone comes by, they'll never know I'm here. Ah, he grunted. He hated being trapped. Worse, he hated being helpless. Take charge, take control, do things your way. That's the way life had always been after he got married. Very seldom did he cave into someone else's way of doing things. Now I'm stuck, he thought. His heart ached at the thought, at the truth. He closed his eyes, tried to calm himself. Just relax, take it easy. You'll think clearer if you slow down. There's got to be a way to... His eyes shot open when a sickening feeling that wasn't quite right. He knew he wasn't alone. Something came over him. The shadow, probably no more than a few inches long, was right across from him, near the water. It raced back and forth, out of sight, then back into it again. Then it came toward him. He jerked his chin inward, then pulled his head back. It was the most he could do since he couldn't move anything else. The shadow sped toward him, weaving left, then right, in blurred figure eights, starting then stopping until it was in his mouth. Jerry clamped his jaws tight, but not before getting a quick mental flash of the small, dark thing hopping inside his mouth, resting on his tongue. His breathing shaky through his nose, he forced himself to look downward to get a closer look. The thing was like a shadow, smoky and dark, not having any real substance at all, but it was there all the same. It was roughly 3 inches long, maybe an inch wide. No legs or arms of any kind, just a body similar to a spider's. A thinner bulb attached to a slightly wider one at the end. He couldn't see a face. What do you want? He caught himself thinking. He knew full well it couldn't read his mind, but there was an unavoidable sensation that perhaps it could. The creature just stayed there by his mouth. It didn't move. Maybe it can't see me. There are a ton of animals out there with vision based on movement. Just stay still. He took his eyes off the creature and looked out on the lake, hoping to see a boat despite knowing the lake was too small for boats. But what if... He looked down again and briefly lost the creature against the shadows created by the curves and dips in the sand. There it was. It still hadn't moved. Instinctively, he curled his toes deep beneath the sand, a habit that he had when his patience was wearing thin. If only this thing would move or do whatever it was going to do. He also wished it wouldn't do anything, because whatever it was going to do, what was it going to do with him? I'm going to die, he thought. That's it. Over. Done. Bye-bye me. Though he rarely prayed, he was praying now. God, look, I know we don't get along, but if you take this thing away from me, I'll do anything you want. Anything. Then, as an absent-minded thought, I'll get a new job so I won't miss going to the beach with my kids. As if he'd ever go to the beach again if he survived tonight. I'll talk to my wife. Anything. Just anything. The thing didn't move. Didn't wiggle. Didn't dart away. Could it only see him if he moved? He curled his toes, scooping up clay in between them and the balls of his feet. At least gripping onto the clay gave him something to do. The moment he squeezed the clay and pictured in his mind's eye the gray mush seeping out from between his toes, the shadow moved and circled around and sped past him, out of eyesight. Jerry's breathing sped up, short and choppy. It was only when he saw a bit of sand dance in the lower part of his vision did he realize he opened his mouth. He snapped it back shut. Where is it? But it was more a feeling than a thought. God, help me. I don't deserve it. Sure thing. But I'll do anything if you get me out of this. It's behind me. I know it. Jerry waited and waited and waited some more. The waves rolled into shore. He released the clay from between his toes and turned his head side to side. Then the creature came back around and settled in front of him, just like before, staying perfectly still. Slowly, carefully, Jerry leaned his head forward slightly, maybe only a millimeter or two. He sniffed, thinking that maybe if he knew what this thing smelled like, he might be able to identify it. It didn't smell like anything. The only scent he picked up was the tinny, almost perfume-like smell of the sand. What if this is all in my head, he thought. Some paranoid delusion because I'm stuck out here all alone. He swallowed. If only it was a hallucination. Movement at the bottom of his line of sight. The creature stirred and backed away, a short strip of black against the gray of the sand. Please go away. Please go away. Please. The creature remained. Jerry curled his toes. Something moved in the water. Whatever it was about 5 or 6 feet from shore. At least that's what Jerry thought, the way the moonlight danced upon the water in horizontal swirls of white. Ovoid dark circles moved along the top of the water like black oil. For some reason it reminded Jerry of a painting he once saw. He couldn't recall which one. Then, the sound of a fish jumping out of, then landing back in, the water. The water sprayed upward in a small splash, but he couldn't see what had come up, then quickly ducked beneath the surface again. The movement stopped. The inky liquid atop the water's surface disappeared. Jerry felt his toes curl, and again the clay smushed between them. He hated the feeling. The clay was watery and solid at the same time, like wet dough. He twisted and turned, tried again to free himself. He grimaced when the bottom of his chin scraped against the sand piled up high against it. Was it his imagination, or, though he couldn't recall correctly, was the sand packed higher around his neck than when Jordan had buried him? Now that he was focusing on it, the sand was up near the bottoms of his ears, then by the bottom of his neckline where he could have sworn it was before. Help! He shouted. He waited, thinking again that maybe a car would come by the parking lot or that some park patrol fellow would hear him. No car, and no one came. That thing, he remembered. Frantically scanning the beach for any sign of the shadow-like slug, he braced himself for the creature to suddenly scurry back to him. Already in his mind's eye, he could see it dart toward him, pause just below his chin, and sit there, as though the two were waiting to see who would blink first. The creature didn't move, and it didn't come. There was nothing. I can't believe this is happening to me, he thought, as if I did anything. I mean, really, anything. To deserve this? His heart ached, its beat quick and fast, to the point of discomfort. He didn't know how long he could stand the fast thump-thump-thumping beneath his chest and was sure that his heart would give out on him if it didn't slow down. Unfortunately, There wasn't much one could do to slow a fast-beating heart. Taking deep breaths didn't work, not when you're buried from the neck down. Too much pressure against the lungs. His eyes focused back on the water when he heard another splash, this one bigger. The black, oily substance not too far from shore had returned, like a dark shadow hovering along the water. It somehow looked thicker and less liquidy. "I can't deal with this," he whispered. Splash! Something black jumped up out of the water and came back down again. The shadow-like slug was back on the beach, right in front of him, no more than 10 feet away. Jerry tried to swallow, but couldn't because his mouth was too dry. "I need a drink," he thought absentmindedly. His heart raced and the numbness of his limbs set on full force. The creature sped toward him, weaving left, then right, back and forth. It was dragging something behind it. "Enough! You want a piece of me? Fine, come and get it," he screamed. The creature was right before him in a heartbeat, and instead of stopping just before his chin like the last time, it leaped into the air and latched onto his mouth. His lips were pressed tight, but he felt the creature trying to pry its way in between, pushing, wriggling, worming. Just below his nose, he saw its black body lashing side to side as it tried to break the seal of his lips. The thing pressed so hard, he wasn't sure just how much longer he could keep the creature out. Already, he was revisiting that mental image from earlier, the image of that thing burrowing into his mouth and sitting on his tongue. He clenched his jaw, tightened the muscles around his lips. He almost didn't notice the creature didn't really feel solid, but more like a tight beam of hot air constantly being blown against his lips. The hot pressure reminded him of the hard rush of air you felt when you stuck your head out of a car window when going 100 kilometers an hour. His muffled grunts were suddenly muted when the water splashed. And splashed. And splashed. Looking past the creature to the water, the waves stopped rolling into shore, and for an instant the water near the shoreline was perfectly calm and flat. Then the waves started curling away. The water bubbled and popped and splashed, and something began to emerge. It rose quickly, bringing a wall of water with it like a sheet of gray and black and white stained glass. Jerry's mouth fell open. Before he realized what he had done, the creature dove inside and sat on his tongue. It didn't move. The sheet of water went up and up and up, a hump of black at its very peak. Then the hump hung at its apex a moment before coming back down in a rush and sending the wall of water outward in a violent spray, submerging Jerry. A sharp pang hit his nasal cavities as the water rushed inward. His head spun, and along with the metal-like taste of the water that burst in through the corners of his mouth, he also tasted the creature. It tasted like cotton and paint. He squeezed his eyes shut and forgot about the creatures, both large and small, and waited to die. The underwater current rushed toward him, plowing against his skin, icy and cold. His whole body shivered, and when he clenched his toes, the clay spread around his skin. They quickly receded, and suddenly he wasn't clenching anything at all. The water around him grew still for a moment before moving in the opposite direction, the sand up around his neck growing thinner. The water pushed his head forward into the sand. He thought his whole face would be plowed into the mound of sand built up around his neck, but instead found the sand gone. Soon he was able to feel the cold water against his shoulders. A sudden coolness touched the top of his head, and the water continued to recede. When his head was finally above water, he instinctively took a deep breath and, in his lower peripheral, saw the tail of the creature inside his mouth hanging limply from his lips. He tried to spit the thing out, but it was latched onto his tongue like a leech. In spite of the water in his mouth, the creature still tasted like dry cotton. He opened his eyes and blinked out the lake water. The lake was a tumult of waves, gray and black and white, roiling and rolling, huge mounds of water. He tried to focus on the waves as they began to settle instead of looking at the hulk of black that had risen from the lake. "If it's going to kill me, I don't want to see it," he thought. But he couldn't help himself. He took his eyes from the water and watched as the large creature raised its black, slick, leather-like tentacles toward the sky. From what he could see, there were 6 of them, each tentacle about 15 feet long, if not more. They spread out from a huge bulb of black, nearly the size of a house. Its skin if that's what it was. Dark and shiny and liquid-looking. A single eye, black and infinite, took up half its face, the eye so dark it paled the black latex-like skin of its broad body. Running from the center of the thing's face was a thin thread that reminded Jerry of a tar line in the road. The thread ran from the blackness to his mouth, and he realized it was connected to the creature on his tongue. He spat and gagged and flicked his tongue, trying to get the thing out of his mouth. It didn't move. His heart pounded and his chest ached. He noticed the sand-stained skin of his shoulders and saw he was free from mid-chest up. He wriggled and twisted and pulled his arms up, tugging his still-asleep limbs away from the grip of the sand. Now looking up at the creature before him, he redoubled his efforts and was able to get his arms free up to the elbows before his shoulders and arms sagged from exhaustion. Panting, cold and alone, Jerry peered up at the creature. Its dark eye took him in, and he wished the moon hadn't hid behind a cloud so he could see his captor more fully. Mind empty, he watched as the monster snapped the tar-like thread like a whip, yanking the thing off his tongue and ripping it out from his mouth. Jerry spat out the tinny, paint-like taste. Blood ran from his tongue and in between his lips. The tiny, shadowy creature sped back toward its master and disappeared. Dark patches out of the corner of his eye. His son's body lay beside him, face down in the sand. Turning his head, he saw Emily lying on her side behind him, half buried in the sand. Maria was on her back, not far from Emily, a good part of her body buried as well. All up and down the beach were bodies, adults, kids, even a few elderly people, some completely revealed, others still partly covered with sand. Tears mixed with the lake water running off his hair and over his eyes. Jordan! Emily! No! Maria! He was already out of breath. The beast on the lake grunted, low and guttural, its sound echoing inside him. My kids. It. They. The words would not come, and he didn't think they ever would. The revelation of what might have happened hit him hard, and it quickly explained why he hadn't noticed any footprints on the beach earlier. Not even a sign of any stirring of the sand. This thing had covered everything. Probably had brought up the sand that was just beneath the shoreline with it from the depths, and for the first time brought it up and covered everyone that afternoon. Covered everything. Except for him. He had been higher up. Jordan. His son just lay there, still and waterlogged. Emily, he whispered. Wake up. My kids. Maria. Their bodies absorbed his voice and didn't react. Though he knew they hadn't survived, it was at that moment he truly acknowledged they were dead. When it really hit home. Everyone was dead. Everyone. Except for him. The creature on the lake lifted its tentacles, then brought them down with a hard slap, showering up a spray of water. It began to move toward him. Jerry's muscles locked, and for an instant his heart stopped beating. At least he thought so, until it started pounding inside his chest, his head, its pulse echoing in his throat. The big black hulk scrambled out of the water like a dog, its tentacles suddenly rigid, clawing at the sand, bringing its mass toward him. With each inch closer, the thing grew a foot taller, a foot wider. Enormous. His breaths came out fast through his nostrils. The creature's shining liquid eye locked on with his. Jerry tried to swallow, but his mouth was so dry that nothing would go down. He forgot where he was, forgot who he was, forgot what would happen, forgot about being trapped. Nothing mattered but the giant squid-like monster coming toward him. The world disappeared in a flash of darkness, and when it focused back into being again, the creature was right in front of him. It stared at him, but like the shadowy slug, it didn't move. A part of him just wanted it to be over, just wanted the creature to do something, anything. He hated playing the staring game and constantly wondering what was going to happen next. Minutes passed, maybe hours, before the creature moved its girth, its huge body head pushing the sand into a heap around where it's turned and yanked itself around. Without meaning to, Jerry tried once more to free himself and, with a hard pull, yanked his arms free from the sand. The second his arms came out, the creature shifted its weight and its eye was once again fixed on him. Don't move. Don't even breathe, Jerry thought. The two exchanged stares. The creature's soul searching and evil. Jerry's wide-eyed with panic. Again, after a time, the creature shifted its weight. Jerry tried to move, and the second he did, the 20-something-foot-tall behemoth stared down at him. He couldn't see a mouth on the creature, just a slick, oily face with a single eye. Its vision is based on movement, Jerry thought. At least he hoped so. If he could just somehow stay still and wait it out. Surely there were others in Birdshill Park near the beach, or, at least, there would be shortly. It had to be nearly dawn, though he was still unsure what time it was. And so he waited, forcing himself to remain still, forcing himself to breathe slow, methodic breaths, anything that would make him appear no less significant than a tree stump. Don't think about where you are. Pretend you're at home with the kids, with... My kids, he accidentally whispered. Jordan and Emily were dead. Tears swelled in his eyes, and as much as he tried not to cry, he couldn't stop himself from sniffling. A sharp pang filled his chest, pierced his heart. He took in the creature, his field of vision following the liquid, slick contours of the monster's form, and he was awed by how perfectly round it was, how impossibly smooth. The creature moved again, and its mass pushed up a mound of sand that was quickly picked up by a light breeze that decided to come by. Some of the sand hit Jerry's face, tickling his skin, and, a moment later, an itch formed. It poked and pricked and begged to be scratched. Jerry grimaced, bit his lips, tried to take his mind off it. You're not itchy. Everything's fine. Relax. It's okay. You're at home. You're watching TV. You're at the park with the kids. You're sitting across from Maria at the dinner table, eating a turkey club. The itch pinched, and he couldn't envision his skin curling from it. He tried to ignore it, but he couldn't. It hurt so bad, and his hand snapped back down to his side as the blessed relief of an itch scratch took over. The monster grunted, faced him, and, near its lower jowls, his face seemed to split horizontally in two, revealing row upon row of sharp, jagged teeth, each at least 6 inches long, if not more, and almost nearly as wide. Its breath was hot and smelled of fish. Its eye locked onto Jerry. He couldn't help himself but scream.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that story, Beneath the Sand. That story was written... Here's the story behind the story for that one. You know, this one was written... It was for an anthology. And it was Parasitic Sands, I think. That's the one it was in. And the whole idea was, I think a lot of it had to do with, like, beach horror. That was kind of the concept behind the anthology, if I remember right. And so that's why it takes place on a beach. And, of course, it take place in Birdshill Park, which is local here in Manitoba. Because I like to have my stories, you know, within province or within the city, just, you know, so that the locals here could relate to it and know. And it's also a way for me to kind of showcase where I live. But anyway, so as we've seen and as we've heard this season, it seems now there's a pattern to these stories I'm reading to you, and they're about people being trapped. So clearly I have an issue with being trapped, feeling confined, feeling, you know. And the funny thing is, in real life, I'm not claustrophobic. I mean, I do get, you know, like the average person, if there's too many people around, I do feel a little stuffed, you know. But in terms of like small spaces or like an elevator or like a narrow stair shaft, you know, that kind of thing, like, that doesn't bother me. That's totally fine. You know, I could even like go into a crawl space and I'll be okay. But the idea, I think, of being in a small space, but then having something pressed against you, holding you in place where you can't move. I know I've had like several nightmares about that type of circumstance, and as in the case with Jerry here in the story, like, for the most part, it's, the whole story is him just simply being trapped and trying to deal with what happened, you know, prior to the monster showing. So even in my dreams, like, it's the same idea. Like, there's not necessarily a monster present. It's just simply I'm stuck and I can't move. So obviously, you know, as per the magic of fiction, it's a way for a writer to be, you know, be a little bit cathartic and get that stuff out. But the other thing that I wanted to establish with this story, especially because it was written earlier in my career, is I wanted to try to do a story that, one, not only had a bit of suspense to it, but I wanted to explore stuff that is not,
obtained visually, right? Because like most fiction, everything is described. There's a lot of visuals, you know, this color is this and this color is that and this is, you know, and whatever. But for this case here, I wanted to try to attempt to use another sense. And in this case, we used touch and smell and taste as the primary senses that Jerry was using throughout the story. And it was challenging to write that story, not like super hard as an impossible, but just more so you had to put your head in a different space because, you, again, instead of thinking visually, you had to think sensory, right? So you had to imagine what it would feel like to have that stuff between your toes. You know, you'd have to imagine what it feels like to have that sand packed in around you. You have to imagine what it's like, you know, having your neck a little bit back and your head poking out and, you know, what all that stuff feels like on the inside. And like the concept of like seeing something and not being able to do anything about it. And you're kind of stuck, right? Like, what are you feeling physically? And so that was part of it. And, I mean, whether I succeeded or not, I'll leave that up to you, dear listener. But yeah, that's basically the main motive of the story, was trying to attempt something different for me as a writer, to grow as a writer, to have a challenge as a writer. Because I think for any artist, you know, we all fall into grooves. And that's fine for a while. But after a time, you know, you kind of need to attempt to try to challenge yourself. You need to try to improve. You need to see if you could take things next level. And even if that next level is like an inch up, it doesn't need to be 10 feet. It needs to be just, you know, even just a smidge. That's good because then it's progress. And, you know, if you keep doing that as a creator, in my opinion, you have no choice but to get better. Like, you know, your efforts may be wonderfully successful or in terms of outcome, or they might just be terrible, but either way, you're learning something, right? So yeah, I encourage any creator listening to this podcast to just explore that idea. Try something new, try something challenging, see what you can learn from it, and then take that and apply it to whatever other stuff you practice, what other, you know, mediums you're into and that sort of thing. So yeah, so that's the story behind the story, and that's my encouragement to you creators. And clearly I have a claustrophobia problem when it comes to being packed in tight spaces and can't move. So I'm gonna go look into therapy, and in the meantime, wish me luck. All right, now we're almost done, but remember what happens, right? Little thing after the credits. So we'll see you then. Cheers. Thanks for sticking around after the credits. This little segment's kind of a PSA / I relate to you kind of thing. So we're going to talk smoking, right? Or vaping. And I'm a vapor. I started vaping in 2016 after like, oh boy, almost 20 plus years of smoking. More than that. Yeah, so I know all about the whole nicotine addiction thing. And the habit that it is, and the need for it, and the cravings, and the way it helps you psychologically, the way it fixes the oral fixation and the habit of having something to suck on, basically. But so if you're out there and you're struggling with this whole thing, just know that I'm struggling too. I can't seem to give it up. I want to. I've had bouts in the past where I was able to quit cigarettes for like, my record is 17 months, which is, and then, you know, you get stressed out and you cave. And that's always the story of every smoker who defaults, is stress. And then there you go. That's your stress release. So if you're out there struggling with it, just know you're not alone. And just to, you know, be kind to yourself and, you know, work on something maybe to try to get off it. But at the same time, you know what, just have compassion on yourself and just try to have a little bit of self-control. But at the same time, you know, don't get down on yourself if you give in, right? Okay, and then my PSA part, though, is simply this. People, do not start smoking. Period. I'm going to put my dad voice on. Don't smoke. If I catch you smoking, you're going to go in the shed with an entire pack. I'm going to make you smoke them all. And then you're going to be so sick of it, you're never going to smoke again. So that's my PSA, because once you get started on nicotine, it is bloody hard to quit. All right. I've heard things where, like, it's easier to quit heroin than it is to quit nicotine. That's insane, because heroin is like high end terrible stuff that people get royally hooked on. So if that is easier to quit than nicotine, that suggests don't start smoking at all. So that's my PSA. And again, for comfort, for my fellow smokers, vapers, and anyone else who consumes nicotine products, just try to play it safe as best you can, man. And if you find yourself increasing use, then maybe look at why and try to pull back and try to address it, just so you don't turn into one of those like 2 to 3 pack a day smoker people, you know, because that's then basically life's over. So anyway, PSA done. Thanks for tuning in this week, guys. Much appreciated. And we'll see you next week, because we have another episode coming up. Story time. The saga continues. Cheers.